There's a reason they call me Hash Browns.
Hey, folks, and welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. I am your host, Dallas Busha, and with me, as always, is the whole crew. Start it off, Donnie.
Don Moore.
Hi, it's Rook.
Al.
And...
and with us today is a very special guest, a friend of mine. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to the Hash Browns.
Hi, Hash Brown.
Hey, man, what's up?
Not much.
So we're episode number 23. We're 23 deep. The last one was probably pretty rough for you guys to listen to because it was our on-the-road episode. We were out in the O-Town convention.
Boo.
Went to MegaCon.
Boo.
Yeah, yeah. Rook's his balls dropped off last week, so he wasn't able to go.
Don't even start with me, bro, okay? I missed so much stuff last week.
I know, man.
You know, I mean, I can't afford to do stuff right now, man.
How was your week, though? I mean, what'd you do last weekend?
Nothing.
I don't even remember now that you mention it, but...
You got drunk, didn't you?
Probably, yeah.
Honestly. Oh, so you can afford to drink, but you can't afford to go to MegaCon.
That's why he couldn't afford to go to MegaCon, because he spent all his money on booze.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's be honest here, I mean...
Typical Irishman.
Yeah. Okay, this coming from the guy that, you know, our plans for the day was to hang out here and work on my house, and instead we end up at the bar until what time last night?
Three thirty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I get here a little bit ago, and Hash Brown and Rook are hanging his front door. And I'm like, oh, you should just leave it off. You guys don't need a front door.
Nah.
That's good. So, gentlemen, how was your week, Don?
It was fairly grueling this week.
Yeah.
They put us on overtime. My partner was in the Philippines, and it's just been extremely busy. But I slept in today, so it's okay.
For people that don't know, Don runs a karate school, and him and another guy and his partner, and they're kind of involved in the whole thing. So I don't know how he does that outside of work, but you're working like 80 hours a week with that, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was pretty pathetic last week.
But, yeah, I worked the same place as Don and Al, and we were on massive overtime, and I really didn't even think the show was going to happen. Kind of last minute, I decided to ask Rook if he'd be interested in doing a show, and, you know, he was cool enough to say, hey, let's do it at my place, you know, because I got a lot of stuff going on, and I can't be bothered to come hang out with you mooks. So we came over here to hang out. So this is actually the first time we've been here.
Hey, come on, you guys got to come and check out the crib, you know, look at all the nice comic books, and you guys haven't even seen the garage yet with all the toys.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It is
we should
nice.
Post some pictures. We should start posting pictures of our collections.
It is nice. It's exciting to see your friend's house, especially when you get to see his collection. It's extremely nice. I like how everything's set up.
Now I've seen all you guys' places.
That's right.
Very nice.
He's like the super stalker. He knows where we're
going. I know. I go, hey, guys. So anybody read any good comics this week? Anything? Anything good?
I have to say, once again, I'm following Dallas. He went to the convention and got a detective.
I got him right here. I wanted to pass him around so everybody could see him, especially old Rookie Baby. Got some good stuff.
I've heard of this writer, Greg Rucka. You know, he always talked about Batwoman. I had no interest, but then Dallas told me that J.H. Williams, the Promethea fame.
That's right, J.H. Williams III. I think he was number one of my favorite comic book artists on whatever episode that was. You know, look in the archives, kids. But great.
Well, he, you know, Dallas lent them to me. Said, "You want to look at them?" Sure. I never gave them back. They're really strong. I have to say, I'm actually going to get them. The story is good. The artwork. I don't know how J.H. Williams can put a book like this out every month. His layouts are just unbelievable. And he also, the issues I've read, he's done three different art styles, and he pulls off every one of them, and it's not jarring. It just goes with the story. And the dynamic layouts he's using, a lot of times, whenever I try to draw a story and try to use, you know, even a little bit more than basic layouts, I fall flat on my face. Now he pulls this off. He can still read the narrative. It's not confusing.
Yeah, that's one thing. It's one thing to be a really good graphic designer, but another thing altogether to make it flow and for your eyes to go to one area and follow the story to
exactly.
Logical next
and I think
step.
That's a problem a lot of artists have is when they do such dynamic layouts, like just this page that I've opened to, for example. I mean, you know, there's so much going on this page, going on here, but just looking at it, I know exactly how this flows and reads, and that's an impressive artist right there.
It is. Now, I think he got a lot of his chops working with Alan Moore, like we were saying, working on Promethea. And so, you know, him and Alan were pretty involved in that area, and I think he picked up a lot from there as far as his design eye. And it's kind of neat to see him doing that with other writers and other kind of genres. The only regret that I would say, or the only complaint that I would have from what I've read so far, those detective books, is the story's a little sparse. It's really decompressed, real drawn out, and his layouts are almost too advanced for the story that's going on.
You mentioned it before. I know what you mean, but there was four issues I read, and each one it builds on it. I see what the writer's doing. I think the writer did it on purpose, but there's more to it than that.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, what do you mean by the story, since I haven't read it, sparse?
Well, I guess because I'm comparing it to Promethea, which is a very dense book, and it's all about the teachings of the Kabbalah. So there's a lot to talk about. And the layouts he's using are telling a story. Of course he's telling a story, but as far as the layouts are set up, it's explaining different aspects of the Kabbalah. And when you kind of translate that into a kind of a basic story where Batwoman meets a dude in an alley, beats him up, you know, it's just not the same.
Okay, for our listeners and for me, explain the Kabbalah.
It was a game by Milton Bradley.
Yes, I did
back
play
in
that.
1971.
we'll put a link on like Wikipedia, and we'll set it up so you kids can go over there and read about it.
It's Wikipedia.
I thought it was Wikipedia.
Is it Wikipedia?
It is,
Wiki.
But I've heard people say Wikipedia.
Wiki.
So that's what I say.
But it's.
Is it
tarot
mysticism?
Cards and stuff. Yeah, some mysticism. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But tarot cards and things of that nature.
So,
pretty
so
cool.
Okay.
I'm not going to go into it because number one, I'll confuse myself, and
well,
number two, I'll confuse everybody else.
That's
and I'll
not the detective comics. Right. He's talking about Promethea.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was. Right. That's what
okay.
I'm. Yeah,
well, you're
okay.
pointing at detective comics.
I thought that was.
He was pointing at Rook's sweet boots.
I thought that had to do with the Kabbalah. Oh, Promethea's the one. Okay.
Yes, Promethea is. Right. But I gotta agree, Don, that
because Moore is into mysticism.
Yeah.
And all that
apparently, he's a magician.
Apparently, yeah. Works at parties or something.
No. If you listen
pick a
to
cat,
him,
any cat.
Yeah. If you listen to him talk, you know, I actually talk about it. It makes perfect sense. He was in some interview, and they said there was some TV show, and they mentioned some famous magician, you know, not an illusionist, but a magician.
Moloch.
And they said, but they said, they immediately
you
went,
totally threw Don off track.
You get it? That was pretty good.
Coherent line of thought, and you just completely screwed that up.
I'm sorry, Zatanna.
Well, he walked on the show, and immediately the host says, he mentioned this magician. He says, he can take water and turn it into wine. And he says, can you do that? And Alan Moore said, well, that's a really nice trick. He says, no, I cannot. He explained that to do that, it takes all these different elements. It takes all this energy and effort. And he says, I look at it, by the time you can do all that, it's easier just to walk over to the corner store and buy a pint yourself. And then he started explaining about magic, about how it works. And, you know, it's kind of like real-life stuff, but it's not like just pulling a wand and making something happen. It still takes the same amount of effort, sometimes even more. But it's just it's a whole world that interests him.
But walking down to the store and getting wine could be considered magic. There's so many processes in getting to that point, you know. It's just magic that's been created by, you know, the human race, not just one person.
Exactly, and that's kind of how he talks. I've always said this. When you listen to a famous person and you read about it in the news or hear people talk, they sound insane. But if you actually sit down with them and listen to them, well, some of them, you know, if you listen to them, okay, they're actually regular people.
Not only does Alan Moore sound insane, but he kind of looks a little crazy,
yeah,
too.
He does.
Did you guys see that comic book guys show or whatever it's called after The Walking Dead?
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't that one dude with the beard, doesn't he look like Alan Moore a little bit? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Actually, he kind of looks more like a clean-cut Alan Moore.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is funny,
you know,
to say.
Alan Moore is just, I mean, you see pictures of him and his hair and his beard, they're just freaking everywhere. Like, he just got out of a wind tunnel or something, you know?
Yep. That's absolutely true.
Cool.
And yeah, Alan Moore's got all those crazy rings.
Yeah, he does. He has
stuff.
The whole finger knuckle ring thing.
Yeah,
going
he's
on.
Probably got really long nails too. I picture him with long nails.
Did you guys ever see this thing called In Search of Steve Ditko? It's a BBC documentary.
Did they find him?
Yeah, they did find him. They did find him. But Alan Moore's in it, and he's, like, funny. It's like, so, like you said exactly, he's very weird. He's got all these rings. And basically the host is searching for Steve Ditko, and they do find Steve Ditko. They go to New York. They go to the office. But they go and let him film it. So
yeah. They go through all the, and they, but they still made the show.
They still met him. We did.
Speaking of,
well, you got some.
No, I didn't bring. I was gonna bring that amazing Spider-Man omnibus that I got. Oh. It's like almost all Steve Ditko. It's this thick.
Wait, you said, "Oh, wait a minute!" And you looked in your bag for it, and you realized you didn't bring it, and you're explaining how big it is and how much it weighs. How did you not know that wasn't a bag
because
before?
There's a lot of stuff in here.
You're talking about something that's like a brick.
Because this is in here.
Holy crap.
Wow.
The comic book tattoo.
Hello.
I'd like to take this moment to correct Don from last episode. He incorrectly said this is this is basically an anthology of different comic book artists and writers. Well, artists, really. And they're short stories based on the works of, who did you think?
I thought it was Laurie Anderson.
It's Tori Amos. So this is all Tori Amos songs, set to stories and whatnot.
Holy cow! Look at the size of that monster.
Dude, you know how much I got it for at Comic-Con or MegaCon?
How much?
$5.
Oh, I freaking hate you guys.
that's a deal. That's not as good as a Stereos pilot for 50 cents, but it's right up there.
I think that's got to go. You know, the number one find, the Stereos pilot.
I think I deserve a no prize for that. What do you think, Stanley?
So what is that book anyway? Is this the stories, songs of Tori Amos?
That's exactly what it is. It's just an anthology, so it's a bunch of short stories. But each one, in the beginning of each story, it shows the lyrics to an entire Tori Amos song. And then it'll be like a 5-10-page comic. And each panel or so will have a verse or a line from that Tori Amos song, and it's following the song. And basically an illustrated versions of her songs, which it's really freaking cool. I haven't really read all of it yet.
Well, one thing in the foreword they talked about is they didn't want to just have illustrated lyrics, which is what most people would have done. Some of them are silent stories. Some of them are just comic strips. I can't say enough about it. I still am bewildered that guy was able to put that project together and get everybody to put that out. And, I mean, like I said, it's phone book thick. It's huge. And it's one style after another, completely opposite. And it all just works
so
well.
Is it all different
together.
Artists?
Yeah, it's all different artists. I mean,
and writers.
Well,
all kinds of stuff.
This is just gorgeous.
Well, the thing is, Tori Amos is the perfect candidate for a book like this, because Neil Gaiman does an introduction in the beginning of the book. Neil Gaiman, the writer of, you know, Sandman and Stardust. And he said it plainly and elegantly that she writes stories. You know, she doesn't write songs, so each song is really a story. And so that's basically, you know, their inspiration. They're drawing it from her songs, which are already stories, so they're just kind of illustrating them. So, yeah, really cool, though. It's called Comic Book Tattoo. It was released by Image Comics, so you guys can check it out.
All right, so you've touched on it a little bit, but you guys went to MegaCon. Let's hear the stories, damn it, you know.
Okay, actually, episode 22... Mm-hmm. Which, this is 23, is our car ride, which I don't think you've gotten to, because as of this recording, we haven't released that episode yet.
No, it's great because it's
the traveling. I'll do that right after this. It's the traveling episode. So the car ride, the first half of the episode is us on the way to MegaCon. The second half is us back. So we talked a bit about it. But basically, it was just a huge event. Stellar, obviously. Have you been in a MegaCon before?
Not in years have I been to a MegaCon.
It's at the Orlando Convention Center. I don't know what the actual name of the convention is.
Orange County Convention Center in Orlando.
There you go. It was basically, it was just like, I'm sure, like the San Diego Comic-Con is. It's pop culture. It's multimedia. So comic books are just a small niche. You've got anime, which is very prevalent there. Manga, anime, all that, you know, J-pop stuff. You've got Artist Alley, where you've got people just peddling their wares. You've got artists from different genres, not just comic book artists, but you have painters and just like some awesome pop culture artists. You've got, obviously, the dress. Everybody, they have competitions, and everybody's just dressed up as their favorite anime character. They had an entire area for Star Wars. They had the whole 501st Squadron was there.
Oh, beautiful.
They had a setup of the Wampa Cave. They had Jawas walking around. They had live, moving, working, interactive R2 units. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had everything there. There was clothing stores I don't know if they had it this year, but last year Hot Topic was in there.
Well, I know one of my friends works for Heart's Delight, which is one of the clothing groups that works with Renaissance Festival. I know her. Oh. I know they were over there as well.
That would make sense, because there were swordsmiths there. There were people making, you know, swords and axes. And, well, not making them, but selling the swords and axes there. They had small tattoo vendors out there. You know, people were getting tats left and right. I was going to get a tattoo Wolverine in my ass, but I never did. And there was there was something else. That was
rather than Wolverine on your ass, you should just get the three slices. Get that tattooed across your ass.
I've always wanted nipples.
Oh, I should get Kitty Pryde, like, phasing through my back.
Oh, my God.
You know, talking about that, in the car, we were talking about what we bought. And, you know, when Alice was explaining about the book Comic Book Tattoo, Al thought he was talking about a book of people with comic book tattoos.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I thought it was at first, too. That's why I was so like, ooh, gimme. But, no, seeing it now and opening it up, it's an amazing book. Beautiful project. It's an impressive idea as well.
And it's neat to see the different styles and the different artists that are in this book. You know?
This thing's just so diverse.
Yeah, I mean, look, that looks like an Archie comic, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then Archie, and then you have
Sandman.
This.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But it all goes together. It's just unbelievable. It's.
You know who else I could see doing a book kind of like this is Tool.
Yeah, absolutely. With the lyrics that
you just take Keenan's got. Take multiple albums and, you know, put them back to back to back and just do the stories.
Yeah,
like
but
this.
Some of these are normal. I don't think Tool can do anything normal.
Yeah, that's a good point. Speaking of Tool, new album's coming out this year.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, they're working on it right now.
I heard.
I'm beyond
a perfect circle. Just needs to get back together.
Have you heard? Have you heard Maynard's band Pussifer?
Yes, I love Pussifer.
These guys are awesome. We were listening to it on the way to the convention, but we were talking, so it was a little
I didn't notice.
I'll have to let you hear it, guys. They're really good.
Now, when you mentioned this, the Illustrated Tori Amos, do you remember Don? Because we were like the old guys. There was a book that came out.
You were like 26.
The Illustrated times two. The Illustrated Beatles that had art by.
I have that.
Didn't it have Barry Smith in it too? A piece of artwork on.
The one I had. No, the one I had. It was one guy that did it. It was all airbrush paintings. Alan something.
Okay. All right.
I didn't know there was another one.
There was one I remember, and it was just like, you know, little illustrations go along with the songs, and Barry Smith did one of them on the 70s. I don't have it, though, but I remember seeing it.
Was it as big and thick as this?
Hell no.
Once again, that's what she said.
You know, when I was trying to put together the show that Dallas hasn't uploaded yet.
I'm going to do it right after this.
I typed in comic book tattoo in Google trying to find a picture of the book to post.
Yeah, no.
And I tell you, everybody, when you turn off the show, go to Google, type in comic book tattoo, and then hit image, and you're in for a real treat. I've never seen so many superhero and comic book based tattoos on human beings in my life. So try that out, and then somebody put a book out so Rook can buy it.
Nice. Rook, have you been reading anything?
Been reading a little bit here and there. Let me see here. Let me look at the big old pile I got of three books. Yeah. most recent issues I've read, of course, are my standards, Walking Dead, The Boys, things like that. And actually, I just read Ultimates 3.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Is that recent? Is the Ultimates universe still kicking?
No, this is an older it's a trade. I can't remember when it was put out, but it was a good read. I mean, not as impressive as the first one. I mean, Ultimates 1, where they really kind of set the precedent for everything with this Ultimates universe, was very, very good. 2 was pretty good, and 3 is just kind of like, okay, now we're just kind of into the regular
stuff that
Marvel-ish kind of stuff. Nothing fantastic or outrageous has happened.
Probably the reason you stopped reading Marvel, right?
Pretty much. Pretty much the same reason I've not been reading a lot of DC as of late. You know, the whole New 52 is like, oh, brilliant. They're going to reinvent everything. And then you go in and you read and you're like, okay. Wow, it's the same freaking stories.
Well, they're
just
already
in a different way.
Canceling some of those books, right? OMAC getting canceled?
Did you really expect all of those books
no,
to
I
carry?
Didn't. They're It's kind of like throwing a bunch of shit at the wall and seeing what would stick. And I think you made that analogy. You talked about that a couple episodes back where you were saying, obviously, Batman, detective action. I'm hoping Adventure Comics sticks, because isn't that one they released?
Yeah. Adventure Comics was,
yeah,
yes.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, but they canceled books, but they already announced new books they're bringing back in. So.
Well, that's because people went, hey, you canceled this book, and this book sucks. That book was great. What are you doing?
You know what sucks? The numbering thing. Like, look, Detective Comics almost made it to issue 1,000. This was, what, issue 854, and that was like 3 years ago.
Yep.
They would have made it to 1,000,
man. The numbers are different.
Going.
Yeah,
has any comic
changed.
Book ever made it that far? Besides The Mighty Blue is going to.
I don't
Everybody
know.
Go check out The Mighty Blue.
But what sucks is that, like, I know our comic shop, Pat's comic shop, he doesn't order extra books of anything, but he's ordering extras of these DC New 52s.
Well,
I see them sitting there on the stands, man.
I think that's the thing. Obviously, those number ones sold like freaking wildfire. They probably made second, third printings. I wouldn't be surprised. But that's it. Once the whole the shock value wears off, then you're done. You know, like who's gonna continue to read all these books?
It was an impressive idea. I put it to the analogy of the Age of Apocalypse. Okay, Age of Apocalypse, brilliant concept. Brilliant story, brilliant execution, was well done. Years later, Marvel went back and revisited the Age of Apocalypse. And guess what?
Sucked balls.
It sucked. It was like a regular Marvel alternate universe. There was nothing dramatically different happening anymore. And this is the same thing that happens with any comic book restart. You come out and it's like gangbusters, and it blows open the doors, and everybody's going, wow, this is fantastic. And then you start getting into it, and, you know, if you get past the fifth issue, congratulations. I didn't. I got bored after number two on most everything.
That's what happens when you get gimmicks.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. It's a gimmick.
So I'm looking at these comic book tattoos, images on Google. Look, somebody has the cover of Incredible Hulk 181, first appearance of Wolverine. They've got the whole cover tatted on their back.
Oh, I know. It's
oh, dude, lettering crazy? And everything?
Yeah. Yeah. Look,
oh,
I don't know
wow.
if it has the price.
But that'd be great.
Yeah, I'm telling like you, there's a bunch of images on Google and just people with comic book tattoos, and they're fantastic. I see them on people's shoulders, calves, backs, chests. And, I mean, just
amazing.
Anything you can see, and they're actually, it was great fun.
But the thing, too, about these 52s is he's ordering doubles and whatever, everything, and they're not selling. Like I told them, why don't you try ordering something maybe that, you know, out of the, you know, something a little bit different. Maybe it'll draw somebody and to pick up a different book. But it's like everybody's conditioned to, you know, this is what's going to sell. This is like, you know.
And that's the thing. And it's been like that way forever. And that's I blame the distribution system,
yes,
Diamond, because
too.
They won't even take you unless you sell so many copies.
I know.
Right? And that's pretty much the only game in town, man.
Well,
what
only game in town now is doing it on the internet, and if it does good, maybe you print up some nice
copies. I'm going to take my printed copies of my webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and I'm going to just set it down in front of a building and just sell them out of a table off the middle of the street.
There you go. That's how you get recognized, you know.
And I plug myself every 5 minutes.
That's what Robert Crumb did.
My God, look. It's actually a picture of the book.
Oh, he found it. Under
look
comic.
At that.
Yeah, it's like on the fifth page down in Google.
Yeah.
You find the cover of Comic Book Tattoo.
No, I think this is like the 900th page or something. But amazingly enough, yes, there is a picture of the cover of the book on Google.
Does it have the words on it, or is it just the picture?
No word on it. No wording's on it. Actually, it looks like it's cropped a little bit as well. So, but there's an actual picture of the book on there for you guys to see. If you know what you're looking for.
I'm sure you can get it on Amazon, too. There's a plug.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Amazon. And once we're sponsored by a comic book service or whatever.
Yeah.
What is that?
That's the book again.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
check
there
that
you go.
Out. Yeah, there's pretty a there's a Google of, what is this, the front, the back page, and probably the inset.
This is good radio.
So, yeah, I know. It's like, hey, everybody, we're going to talk about things that we're visually looking at you can't see.
Well, why don't we take a quick music break and check all this out, and then when we come back, I've got a little surprise for the boys. So what are we listening to? What do we got?
Listen, this.
I'm not editing.
This is
I'm
a real prepared
show.
Let's listen to some Brian Yetter again.
Okay.
Here we go, Brian Yetter.
Brian, you're getting on the radio again.
Thank you.
Oh my god, it's the X-Men Survival Guides of the Mansion.
You guys have no idea. We have sold this thing and bought it back from each other.
Yeah, I think Rook bought it first, and then he sold it to me, and then I sold it to him, back and forth, and finally he ended up with it.
Yeah.
Alright. Well, there's something that should be on the
show. Are we on?
We are now.
Oh, wow.
We are
okay.
Now.
Well, that was my pal Brian Yetter doing Reconsider Baby. Brian, you owe me, man. You've been on twice now, so, you know, the record sales got to be going up through the roof by now.
I just want to point out that we're not drinking any alcohol in this episode. You should be very happy. It's going to be a very concise...
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, good call. Mm.
Dude, I'm at my house. I can drink all I want here.
Mm, this is like an explosion in my mouth.
That's what she said.
It's a mountain explosion.
Taking a dive right now.
Maybe we should drink some beers.
There goes the PG rating.
Yeah. So
well, gentlemen.
No. Tell me, I need to hear about this book that you two keep selling back to each other.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
The X-Men
here,
Survival.
Let me go pull it off the shelf here, Dallas. You explain.
So it's an old book. When we were young, we got everything X-Men. We loved X-Factor because Peter David's the bomb diggity. We loved X-Force, X-Men, whatever was X-Men, right? And so there was a book. It was a spiral-bound book called The X-Men Survival Guide to the Mansion, and it had blueprints and layouts of the entire mansion and the danger room and all that business, all that stuff that a 12-year-old kid would freaking love. So there was, I think the story goes, there was only one copy in the comic shop, and Rook ended up buying it.
I got there before you. That's how I got
That's it. That's what happened. So Rook got the book, and I was never able to get it. So eventually, Rook was getting rid of some of his books, and he sold it to me. Well, I ended up selling it back to him not long after that, and then he somehow it got back in my hands after that, now it's gotten back in Rook's hands. So this book, that particular book that's in your lap right now, Don, has been sold back and forth between Rook and I many times over the past 15 years, probably, or more.
Many times. It's a cool little book. I mean, like you said, it's got all the blueprints, all the layouts, and everything. There's one page in particular. It's like a it's like a hazard suit. It's like a mechanized.
Is it Rogue in it?
Yeah, and Rogue. What you do is you hold it up to the light, and you can see how Rogue fits inside the suit. It's absolutely hilarious.
All the stuff you'd go freaking bonkers for, especially big old X-Men tools like me. And
Yeah. Like being like a. What were we? We had to been like 12.
We were or less. Yeah. I mean, look at that. A freaking a blowout of the entire Blackbird.
Yeah,
SR-77.
Which is really strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a good job on this book. It's really cool.
The Shi'ar and Imperial Guard, all that.
Yeah, because it looks like a little thin spiral bound notebook, it is a thin spiral bound.
And there's a
fold-out.
Fold-out page. Yep.
A huge fold-out. Well, it's not coming back to me now.
But I mean, it's just full. It's full of stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is a neat. Let me see if.
Oh, when is it my turn to buy that off? You know.
$50.
That's the problem. You know, every time your collection gets so big, you start selling stuff off, and you think, oh, I don't have the space to get rid of it. Then later you wish you hadn't, and you start searching it out again.
I've already done that. I think I talked about it last episode when we were talking about Uncanny X-Men. I've gotten rid of well more than half my collection just in the past year or two. And I'm now that Uncanny X-Men has ended, the final issue was 544. I'm kicking myself for getting rid of like hundreds of those books, you know, because I'd love to finish the whole collection. I kept like the first, you know, up till issue 200. I have like the majority of those, but then everything after I got rid of. All right, well, boys, I got a little surprise. Figured I'd do it on air because I want to see your, I want to see how you feel.
Yeah, so the audience, they want to see how our reactions are.
Because we're doing a video podcast, right?
Wait, so Don, I should be wearing clothes?
Seven Soldiers of Victory?
Damn it, when did you get
it? It's a hardcover.
Where are you getting these?
It's magic. It's a little present for you if you're interested.
Seriously, he's pulling out books again.
I know. Al, All-Star Comics.
All right.
Hardcover.
Yeah.
Here you go, man.
Nice.
This is Happy Valentine's, guys. So I'm not going to get you flowers, and you're not going to get it in. And Rook, From the Ashes, the Uncanny X-Men.
Really?
I knew you'd love that if you don't have it already.
Nice.
Awesome. Sorry, Hash Brown, I got a...
Thank
it's
you,
right.
Dallas.
Hash Browns, we got like a limp ball for you.
I've got some Alkaline Trio back here.
You're so nice.
Dallas is reaching behind himself, grabbing my CDs and giving them away.
How did you get the name Hash Brown?
He doesn't even remember.
I don't remember. It was during when I was heavy into the bar scenes, and instead
you
of
you mean you're not now?
Let him talk.
Now. I've definitely cut back on my old age now, and just, you know, I had such a plain name that someone would yell out and 40 people would turn around and answer. Someone yells out Hash Browns. I know they're talking about me. You know? So it kind of stuck.
Yeah, it's a unique name. I've never met anybody named Hash Brown except for you.
Yeah. Not many people are named after food groups.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful food group.
Right? You can do anything to it. Just like me.
I'm getting hungry right now. Very nice. Cool, man. I better get this out of my pile. Otherwise, this survival guide's coming
with me.
Let me
get that back with me. Thank you. I'll be looking for that later going, damn it.
So, Al, have you been reading anything lately? Or?
Well, I got that Fantastic Four Archives. I think it's volume 3 over there. It's interesting because I hadn't read those stories in a long time. And I like them, of course, you know, the Thing and the Hulk and the Avengers and all that. But I was just, you know, since I'm more of an art guy, I'm not liking the, I forgot about the George Bell inks on Jack Kirby. Oh. I'm not liking it at all. It's real sloppy kind of. I'd forgotten about it. But then towards the end you get inking by another guy called Chick Stone, who was a...
Oh, yeah.
And so much better and so much nicer to look at. But these are great books, man. I mean, these are like the most awesome books that I remember as a kid. Yeah. I mean, that was before I started collecting, but that Stan and Jack stuff is still like, you know, the primo to me, so...
What is his name, George Bell?
Yeah, his real name is George Roussos. And I guess for whatever reason, he was using the name George Bell. I mean, they're okay, you know, but I just hadn't seen him in such a long time, and it was kind of a jarring contrast between his kind of like loose, sloppy inking and Chick Stone, which I guess Chick Stone was inking more with like pen, more pen work maybe, or tight line work, and Russo's was real sloppy brush work, which probably could work for other artists, but I'm not liking it, so I was like,
He wasn't on Fantastic Four for very long,
though. He was on for, I think, about 12, 13 issues. He's probably really fast, which seems to me like, you know, probably like a prerequisite, so... But the book's beautiful, and I mean, all the early FFs are all great, so yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What issues are these?
These are from, like, 21 through, like, 30.
Yeah.
You've got the first 10. You bought the first 10, right, at the show last week?
No, I bought 31 to 40, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, these were the ones right before. You got the Chick Stone issues, too, I think.
Yeah, well, I always thought Joe Sinnott had inked all the Fantastic
Four. Dick Ayers started out
first.
Yeah,
there was Dick Ayers, and I think there was another guy that did an issue, and then Joe Sinnott came in, I think, on the third or fourth one.
No.
Oh, it's not.
I know Dick Ayers was a pretty big guy in Marvel right in the 60s.
Yeah,
did he ink a lot of other books besides the FF?
He did a lot of Westerns, and he also penciled the, Sergeant Rocks. Inked by John Severin, who's just passed away. He was a great artist.
That's right. I think you mentioned that on episode 22,
that
he passed.
No, but Dick Ayers and then George Bell did a bunch of them, and then Chick Stone and then Joe Sinnott did them all the way to the end. But yeah,
the end of Kirby's run?
Yeah, the end of Kirby's run, yeah.
Yeah, they became a team.
Sinnott did like 50 issues.
Yeah, he's the one I always remember, and he stayed with it after Jack Kirby left. He was the one that inked everybody else.
So was it Joe Sinnott that was doing like the Black Panther, the Inhumans, the Galactus, all that stuff?
Yeah.
That was Joe
Sinnott. Yeah, he did the Primo ones. Yeah, even though these were Primo, but yeah.
He even inked the George Perez stuff, the Rich Buckler and George Perez stuff that came later.
Was that the 70s or 80s?
Yeah, he stayed all the way up until the 80s.
Oh, okay.
He inked this one issue that's in Kevich pencil, and it was just like, wow, it was just weird. You know,
well,
with Joe Sinnott, those are two... completely different styles.
Two different universes.
Well, that's what they say, you know, the Jack Kirby Joe Sinnott team, I think, is probably the one everybody liked the best.
Yeah.
And they said that was a really strange mix because Joe Sinnott was completely different than Jack Kirby. And, you know, Joe Sinnott actually kind of put himself over Jack Kirby's stuff, and it worked beautifully. He was my favorite inker over Jack Kirby.
Definitely.
But, again, sometimes odd mixes work pretty well.
Yeah, Wally Wood over Jack Kirby was pretty sweet, too, you know, when he did Challenge of the Unknown, but yeah. Yeah, I don't mean to put down George Russo's because he's a fine artist, but it's like jarring to see those because I hadn't seen them in so long. I remember when I was a kid, I would buy these things called Marvel Collector's Item Classics that were like the reprints of the very early Marvels, and they were reprinting them 3 years after they were out, and I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. This is a way to get all the early issues, and I just go, oh, wow, this is great. But now looking at it again, I was like, not so much. But the book's great, so.
Yeah, it does look sloppy over Jack Kirby's pencils, but it's still awesome.
It's still awesome because it's Kirby. So.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go. So that's what I've been checking out this week.
Nice. Oh, I just wanted to say, because we're talking about old books, and at the convention, somebody had a sweet spinner rack with single issues set up in their little area. And I just thought, you know, that was pretty much the only the only way you could get books back then were on spinner racks.
Yeah, spinner racks.
Well, spinner
racks. Yeah, they've got a spinner rack right in front of the store.
Yes, they do. Is it like the Archies and stuff, right?
Well,
it's various stuff.
I always passed it up, and then one time I was in there, I found an issue of Gru I was looking for, a couple of issues of think Thor the Mighty Avenger, there was a bunch of books that I was trying to find that they had on a spinner rack. So yeah. The spinner rack was okay with me.
Yeah, the spinner rack up there can sometimes contain, you know, just kids' books. Other times it'll, you know, have stuff that, you know, we're all looking to read.
Right.
It's kind of a little bit of a, you know, a dig in there. You know, you can just kind of take it for a spin and see what you find.
Yeah, and if you got a good store, you get the double spinner rack. You get two of them, so you're like, man, these guys are jamming over here. They got it all here. Yeah.
I thought it was just really neat to see at a convention where you have all these dealers and everything set up on the wall. They got expensive books. They got, you know, the long bookcases. And then you have a spinner rack just in the middle of the aisle. It's like freaking awesome to see that, you know.
Yep.
And I remember, I got a good one for you. Back in the day, Don, I think this happened to you too. Did you ever go to I remember going to a convenience store, and it was like, we were traveling to Orlando. It was like somewhere in Lake Wales or Winter Haven or something. And of course, I got my parents, hey, could we stop and get comics? Yeah. And I went into this thing, and I'm looking through the books, and I find a book that's like 3 years old in the rack. And I'm like, oh my God, this is like totally rare. This is unbelievable. Because usually they were left in for like 2 or 3 months and then they were pulled out.
Because that was before the direct market and before comic shops.
I'm talking like 72 or something like that. In 72, I found a 67 book and I was like, oh my God, wow, this is unbelievable. And I never understood how that happened. I guess this book was just left in there and nobody bought it for 5 years.
That happened to me once in Graham, Texas. I walked in and they had a bunch of old Dells. I never heard of Dell. It was long gone by this time. But this one store had a shelf with a bunch of comics and magazines on it. And that's where my brother bought that Dracula book by Tony Tallarico.
Oh, that's right. That's an awesome book.
And we got this in, I think, 1972. And, you know, those Dell had been long gone by that time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess it kind of doesn't say a lot about the store that they leave stuff sitting there and nothing sold for so long. But to me, I looked at it was a treasure because, you know, you found all these books that to me was like a, you know, a blast from the past. But yeah, that was rare that ever happened.
Yeah, the spinner rack was left for years without getting the stuff out of it. But yeah, I do miss the spinner rack.
Forget May. The first weekend in May is always Free Comic Book Day, the first Saturday. So if you're not here in our area and you can go to Yancey Street, go to your local participating comic book shop and partake in Free Comic Book Day. But if you're here, again, Yancey Street's going to have a lot of people there again. A lot of special guests, artists, writers. Very cool event once again for you.
Oh, that's right. They always go all out like we've talked about in the past. But like Rook said, if you're not in the area, and you know, you just go to your local, your local comic shop, and they're going to have a lot of good stuff going on no matter where you go. I mean, most places have, you know, maybe 25 to 30 to 40% off back issues. They have deals on trades. I mean, they usually make a pretty good event out of it. So if you can't make it to Yancey Street, just go to your LCS and you're going to find some good deals. Just support them, you know. I mean, they're all struggling out there right now with the, with Amazon or just direct market
online. One of the
things
you got to remember, everybody, is your local comic book shop is just that. It's a local-owned comic book shop. These are the guys that are living next door to you and me, making a living. They're selling comics. Go out and support them. Quit buying your damn books online. Quit, you know, having stuff mailed to you or reading digital comics. Get to the comic book shop.
And that's the thing. A lot of times they will have deals at those places too. So if you think you're going to pay less online, you never know. Just check out the shops. And plus, it's just great going for the experience. I know Rook's always up there. You know, he knows the owners of Yancey Street. You know, you just have a good time talking to the guys. And every time I go up there, it's fun. I mean, I actually enjoy it. I kind of feel like we should all go up there after the show. But it's I'm sure we're all going to be there, hopefully.
Absolutely.
Let's do a podcast inside the convention. I'll bring my Walkman.
Another road trip show.
That doesn't sound like fun to me.
I'll bring my Walkman. Like, hey, say something to people.
You get that thing out of my face.
Dude, who the hell are you guys?
Oh, I like that Magneto bust you got over there. That Magneto statue.
Oh, you like that? One of my neighbors gave that to me for my birthday 1 year.
That's freaking awesome.
Cool,
yeah, that's nice. Yeah. I saw that.
Speaking of X-Men, have you read the Uncanny X-Force before?
I've perused it a little.
Oh, I had to bring this.
I've read an entire issue.
I had to bring it for you to take a look at it. It's Rick Remender writes it, who's an amazing writer. You know, he did, what's that space? Fear Agent. Rick Remender did, sure he did Fear Agent. Jerome Apena, he drew it, which is awesome. Which, I wish I had a name like that. It'd be awesome. You go to a bar and, like, hitting a girl and be like, hey, how'd you like some Jerome Apena? But he's an amazing artist. It's a lot of, I think it looks like a lot of painting, watercolor maybe, in some areas. Very, very the colors are just vivid. But, yeah, it's actually a pretty decent read, you know. I've only read a couple issues myself, but I was surprised. It's not the normal crap that you see from X-Men.
You know, actually, Uncanny X-Force recently ended up in the Age of Apocalypse universe, and is this the issue that it happened in?
Mm-mm.
Because I'm seeing something at that point, Age of Apocalypse here.
There's a new Four Horsemen there, and Apocalypse has been reincarnated as a little boy there. And I'm guessing it's leading up to the events of the new Age of Apocalypse, probably.
So what is the Age of Apocalypse?
Ooh. Well, like every other story in the X-Men, it's an alternate reality.
Really?
Basically, it gets started because of, help me out, am I saying his name? It's Legion, right?
Yes. Spoilers if you live in 1992.
Yeah. If you haven't read Age of Apocalypse, get ready for some spoiling. Basically, what happens is Xavier's son goes back in time, and he's going to fix everything by killing Magneto. Well, of course, it's never that simple. He goes back, screws up, and kills his father instead.
Who is Professor Xavier?
Yep. He kills Professor X. So, Age of Apocalypse is what happens when Professor X never created the X-Men. Apocalypse rises, he takes over North America.
Mr. Sinister grows a sweet stash and beard.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Sinister's got an awesome Fu Manchu thing going on.
Apparently, that's what happens if Professor X doesn't exist.
Yeah. Not to mention Cyclops has, like, you know, Adonis haircut. It looks like Fabio.
Wolverine's got one arm because another one got chopped off somehow.
I actually have the entire Age of Apocalypse series sitting right behind that one of those boxes over there that I recently got a hold of thanks to some flip-flop wearing dude in the room.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, and Magneto's getting it in with Rogue.
Oh, yeah, Magneto, not only that, he has a kid with Rogue. It's a very cool reimagining and redesigning of the X-Men universe, along with the General Marvel universe as well. They did a couple of books showing what happened to everyone else in the Marvel universe.
I don't think I had those.
I only had the first one. I could never get my hands on the second. I'm still looking for it.
Is this a regular series, or is it just a bunch of miniseries?
No, it was a miniseries set. Each book had, what, four or five
issues? There were four issues. So for four months,
there
all
was
the titles...
There was an Alpha and Omega at the book.
They were like bookends, basically. That was something called X-Men Alpha, and it was like a 64-page book that
Alpha
told how it happened.
Alpha started everything, brought you into the universe, told you really what was going on.
Who's who and what you needed to know.
And splintered you off into the different miniseries.
Yeah, so for
instance... And then at the end of each miniseries, you got brought back together in Omega, and you were brought into this final conclusion of this world.
But each of the miniseries was taking over from a regular X-Men title. X-Men, whatever issue they were on, stopped for 4 months. And so Astonishing X-Men lasted for 4 months. Generation X stopped and was taken over by Generation Next, which was the Age of Apocalypse version, right? Rook's saying no right now.
Right.
You can't hear him, but now he's saying I'm right.
Nobody can hear you, Rook.
He's saying I'm awesome? Thank you. I'm a badass? Thank you.
I thought it was Gambit and the Externals that took over.
Gambit and the Externals took over... no idea. X-Force?
And Rook has got a stack of X-Men comics.
Maybe.
He's going to read the entire history of this thing.
X-Factor was replaced by Factor X.
Everybody get comfy. I'm about to read you.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Page one.
Can I do Wolverine's voice?
We had X-Factor, Gambit and the Externals, Generation Next, the Weapon X.
That took over Wolverine.
Astonish X-Men. And the Amazing X-Men.
Amazing X-Men took
over.
These
are all separate titles?
These were all separate titles. Each one of these was a separate title unto itself. And like I said, four issues. And 1 through 4 carried you through these different things happening to this particular set of characters. For example, the Summers Brothers. I said Summers, not Smothers.
Smothers Brothers was a musical thing in the 60s, if you don't remember.
What about the Allman Brothers?
We've got a bunch of people Googling that right now. Yeah. The what brothers?
After comic book tattoo, look up Smothers Brothers.
Scott and Alex actually work for Sinister, of all people.
Mr. Fu Manchu himself?
Yep. So, but Yeah, he had X-Men Chronicles, the Alpha Omega.
X-Men Prime was the one after Omega that led you back into the normal universe and the changes that affected everyone.
Yes, because there were actually some characters that came over from this universe into the regular Marvel 616.
Some say that's where Dane Cook came from.
One of the characters in particular that really was an excellent character was X-Man. X-Man was... did I mention X-Man?
No, you didn't. No, no.
Yeah, X-Man was another one that... basically, it's Cable.
Young Cable.
It's a young Cable without the technovirus. He's raised by carnival freaks, which in this case, you know, is not so freaky. they're led by Forge. X-Man is one of the guys that came over from this universe into the regular series, along with the Dark Beast.
Blink.
Blink came
she's
over.
She's still a very popular X character.
Is she still in the series?
Well, as far as I know.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. I won't even mention that in case anybody hasn't read it and wants to, because that's a heck of a thing.
They've released them as I want to say they have hardcovers collecting all the Age of Apocalypse books.
That would
you
not
can
surprise
find them.
Me.
Yeah. Or even what are the big fat ones I was talking about earlier?
Omnibus.
Omnibus. They might have an Age of Apocalypse omnibus. You should Google
that.
That
would be nice. That would be nice if that they did that. I think these are something that I was not even aware of, was the X-Men Chronicles. I think I got these from you when I got
I think
got
they were basically I think they replaced either X-Men Unlimited or just the annuals.
Well, what these did is these filled in some of the background stories behind these characters, why they reacted a certain way to each other. What exactly drove Rogue and Magneto together, you know? What happened? Wondegore. Wondegore was a.
Who?
There was a slaughter up there of people. You know, it's a very interesting series.
Is that where Nightcrawler's from?
No.
No.
Wondegore is the High Evolutionary's place.
Oh.
I do know that one.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Wondegore was. Magneto was hiding out there.
I must have misread that issue. Thanks. I don't.
Oh, Wondegore. It's old. That's 70s Marvel.
Yeah.
The High Evolutionary was a guy that basically became a god, but he was creating all these creatures, you know, like man creatures that were like half man, half animal.
Kind of like Magneto did in Neil Adams' run on X-Men.
Well, a lot like Sinister.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know,
he was a geneticist.
Yeah, he was kind of a geneticist. But if I remember High Evolutionary, he had some kind of either timeline to his background. He was like from the future, or he was from another planet or something. I don't remember exactly.
I read the Evolutionary War, which is one of those big Marvel crossovers in like 88 or 89. I think 88, because 89 was the Atlantis attacks. But that's the only Evolutionary stories I've read. I don't know. Is he like an Avengers villain, or who is that dude?
No, he wasn't a villain. Well, I knew him from the Adam Warlock stories from the early 70s. He was involved in that, but. He had a bunch of, kind of like Dr. Moreau, had all these man-beasts.
Right.
And but he had this really cool cylinder kind of metal city on top of a mountain, and that was his domain.
Like but, Karnak?
The Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver ended up starting out there, you know, and a bunch of stuff. It all tied in, but I haven't read any stories since I was a kid.
Rook just busted out. We're going all old school today.
Before we go past this,
look out, ladies and gentlemen.
Dallas says old school. Al, do you have any idea about half these X-Men characters these guys are talking about?
Well, some of them is familiar because when I was running the comic shop, I remember the storylines, but I don't remember reading them at all. But I do know I have a grasp of what they're talking about. I remember Atlantis attacks and that stuff.
You have to remember, this is Rook and I were 10, 11 years old growing up reading this, so this is like our prime comic book collecting.
You're talking late
stuff.
80s, early 90s,
yeah.
Something
so,
like that.
So
yeah.
We're reading this stuff, like we know these by heart, you know?
Well,
because
like I said, when I was a kid, there was one X-Men comic. All the way up to when I was in college, there was one X-Men comic. And
Stan Lee wrote the hell out of that, didn't he?
Oh, but when John Byrne left the X-Men, you know, that's when Paul Smith came in. There was an interview with John Byrne, and they were asking him why he left, and he was just complaining about how it just got to be too much. And he says, Marvel, you know, the X-Men did well. He says, Marvel's going to start putting a lot of stuff. I said, he liked Spider-Man, I guess, until the late 70s when it was like five Spider-Man
titles.
When
they flooded the market.
And he was saying, you're going to see this happen to the X-Men. And I thought, oh, please. I mean, to me, the X-Men were counterculture at the time. Most people didn't know what they were. And he said, you're going to see, it's going to be like Spider-Man. It's going to be a bunch of stuff. And now I'm looking at like 75 different series that Rook's got at his feet. He's got a giant book full of cards. He's got all these cross-reference books. He's got this encyclopedia. And all I keep thinking is, my God, John Byrne was right.
Son of a bitch.
Okay, go ahead, Rook.
To the whole reason that I grabbed this, High Evolutionary, in case we're wondering here, first appearance, 1966, Thor number 134. And he was a geneticist. Nothing in regards to... like the alien or anything like that that I had talked about, but it does say that he has evolved himself to a higher plane of consciousness, giving him cosmic awareness.
Huh. But so, I think the stuff he talked about, I think that did happen later, because it just keeps changing.
So is he a Thor villain? Would you consider him a Thor villain?
Thor Avengers is what they list his main...
Okay.
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking of Kang is who I'm thinking of.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? If you take a look at this picture, you take a look at High Evolutionary, now take a look at Kang.
Yeah.
How much alike do these guys look?
You know who Kang also looks like? Is Mesmero. Look at those colors, green and purple.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy, it's Mesmero. Yep. And who's the dude with the fat dome on his head, the Spider-Man villain?
Mysterio.
Mysterio. He looks like Mysterio, too.
Well, the Sinister Six.
You know who Kang was?
He was an Avenger villain, right?
No.
No, I'm thinking of Ultron.
So. He was a Fantastic Four villain. He was King Ramatut.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
I remember him in Captain America, too.
Yeah, but he started out, it was like the fourth, fifth issue of Fantastic Four when he went back to ancient Egypt, and he was Ramatut. And he came from the future as a time traveler. And then I don't know how in the 70s he was Kang.
Kang, it says his first appearance as Kang was Avengers 8 in 1964.
Comics has a lot of inbreeding between the characters, ladies and gentlemen.
So we're on the subject of villains. Would you consider, is Juggernaut, is he an X-Men villain or a Spider-Man villain?
X-Men.
I think
so, because he showed up, didn't he show up in a lot of Spider-Mans back in the 70s and 80s?
Yeah, he showed up in some.
He showed up here and there, but I think overall he was and always will be an X-Men villain. Oh, yeah. I mean,
about Arcade?
His first appearance was X-Men 12, 1965.
Well, I know. What about Arcade? Would you consider him a Spider-Man villain?
X-Men.
Well, see, the first place he ever showed up was Marvel Team-Up that I had seen, and it was because Captain Britain teamed up with Spider-Man. Arcade was after Captain Britain. And then it was 3-4 years later he showed up in the X-Men.
What about Kane from the WWE? X-Men villain?
What?
I don't know.
Where did he come from?
I don't even know what he's talking about.
He's talking nonsense now.
You know, there's no point to this whole show.
Isn't that the point of the show?
Here, you asked about Arcade being X-Men or
Spider-Man
villain. Arcade is nowhere in the Marvel comic book cards, but I guarantee you, if I grab the X-Men cards off that shelf, there's a card for Arcade.
Well, that's actually a good point. There is, because I do remember. I think I remember Joe Jusko painting one.
Get the cards.
Yeah, you want me to get the cards? We'll test it.
Cut the cards.
A lot.
That's a lot of cards, man.
That's not a lot of cards. You know, I've seen nothing yet.
I'm sitting here, a few episodes ago, I was talking about it. I didn't understand the appeal of the X-Men cards and all these guys are getting them. And now that Rook has got these out, I'm starting to see the appeal. These are really awesome.
Well, if it wasn't for these cards, then we'd have to go online to find out where so-and-so's first appearance was.
Okay, so here's the X-Men cards, Series 1.
Well, what are these other cards you have?
These are the Marvel cards. Marvel Series 1, 2, 3, and 4, I believe, is in here.
Yeah, you got Namor and the Human Torch.
Yep, 2, 3,
I hated Series 3. That shit was terrible.
Series 3
was
cool.
I used to sell
them.
Not
like Series 3, dude. You line these cards up and you have a huge universe.
I just don't like the art.
Behind all the cards.
Is that Andy Kubert doing that stuff?
And then Series 4, you had the whole page.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, the whole page layout.
It was
great.
Jusko did the Marvel Masterpieces or something?
Yeah, yes, which actually I have as well.
I have at home a box of cards of those that from when I worked or whatever. I'll have to pull them out one day and like...
I don't have any of mine.
I'll have to put them on my bike and put them on the spokes.
Hash Brown is walking out the door with Rook's cards.
Yeah,
didn't Jim Lee do the entire first X-Men run of cards?
I don't know. I'd have
to look. Back in the early days, didn't they have like a big explosion of cards? They had the X-Men cards, all the Marvel cards.
How many books?
Yeah, that's all these right here.
All the artist cards and stuff like
that.
Yep,
yeah, they had the artist ones. They had everything, man.
Yeah, they even had serial killer cards, I think.
Well, that was when you were working at a comic store, right?
And these too, yeah.
That's right.
That was like the...
Here we go. Series 2, X-Men, Arcade.
Oh, you were right. See?
Okay,
it's like the first one.
Arcade... Now, see, this doesn't
his
talk
first appearance with Spider-Man, though.
It doesn't mention his first appearance on these cards.
That's because they don't want to say that it's Spider-Man.
Well, the first time I had seen him was in Marvel Team-Up. And that was when Captain Britain, they did a two-issue crossover with Spider-Man. I never heard of Captain Britain, never seen it. And it was Arcade. And then, like I said, later he showed up in X-Men. I don't know if he was in the comics before that, but I had never heard of him.
I think this is our geekiest episode by far.
Yeah, well, you know, around this era...
James, you're going to love it.
Before the... This was the unholy alliance between cards and comics, because baseball card shops had started to up. You know, before you had a few comic shops here and there, and then they started, you know... there were more of them. And then the baseball card shops opened up, and we had one next door to where we were, so it's kind of like...
Yeah.
Everybody was like, yeah, let's get both, you know, audiences.
I mean, you've got that whole theory about that.
Oh, yeah, man. I worked it, man. I lived it. That was my life for like 7 years or whatever.
Okay, hold that thought for a second. Now, Rook just showed me a card of Colossus, and then it says Marvel Supervillains. Explain that to me.
In this particular mid-90s. Time, in 1994 is when this card series came out. Colossus was actually a villain.
Because of Ilyana.
Yep, he was living... with the Acolytes, Magneto's Acolytes, on Asteroid M. I don't remember exactly what had happened, but...
Well, basically, the whole thing is Ilyana, his little sister, died from the Legacy Virus. And during the funeral, Jackass Magneto shows up and I don't know if there was a fight, I don't know what happened, but Colossus ended up going with him because he had gotten disenchanted with the whole dream.
Mm-hmm.
So he was living up with the Acolytes for... Couple issues. It wasn't that long, right?
Yeah, I don't recall it being very
just long enough for that card series to get released.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know what? This actually out right here. This is, remember we were talking the one episode about when Marvel comic books started with the Flare cards.
These are
the 94 Flare Ultra cards. So,
that's a really good set, though. Look at that art. Like they got the original X-Men there,
fantastic.
You know, Beast and Marvel Girl.
Oh, and then here's right behind it, the 1995 again, Flare Ultra cards.
Hey, look, there's Arcade.
Yeah, at that point, I was out of the, I wasn't working there anymore, so I missed those. But I mean, basically, like, my theory is that the, you know, the comic book stores, the cotton, the baseball card shops, and then you know, the book started like getting more popular, and the cards getting more popular, and then the death of Superman killed it all.
Dallas, interestingly
enough,
comic
implosion too. Yeah,
well,
the speculators market.
Do they still have cards based off comic books? Do you still see them?
I have no idea, but I remember going to like the malls, and they had like the they had little convention shows in the malls every weekend. You would have the card guys, and they would have all the comic book cards and all that stuff. And then
they had artist
cards, and they had like I said, serial killer cards and all. So I don't know if they're still making that anymore. So.
Yeah, no, I have not seen comic book cards in a very long time now, actually.
Oh, okay.
They just went away.
It was a phenomenon then.
Oh, yeah, it took over the world. This is the first time I've ever understood the appeal of the cards. This is actually great fun.
Well, you know what
it's kind of cool. You learn something new all the time.
Well, you know what they did? They would put a hologram card in them. So you'd be buying the packs and hoping you'd get a hologram
card. In an old episode, that's what Rook and Dallas were talking about. And I guess they faded over time?
I believe they did. I think actually Rook was talking about that.
The holograms faded? I didn't know that.
I wouldn't be surprised, yeah. I mean, that stuff doesn't last forever.
I figured, you know, they're holograms, man. They're, you know, eternal or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I've still got the hologram cards.
Oh,
hold on. Let's take a look.
They haven't fallen apart or anything?
Let's see. Hold on.
Of course
find
you do.
It
of course
in
you
the...
got them.
It wasn't...
Yeah, it was serial.
Here we go.
Oh, yeah, look at
there
that.
There it is.
It's still got some.
Ooh, is that Jim Lee art?
That is...
Oh, yeah, son.
Yeah, it is. That's I can tell from here.
Still got some hologramming going
yep,
on.
But was it before you could see it from all angles? It wasn't that.
No, as I recall it, you really couldn't see it from all angles. You kind of had to sideways hold it and stuff. And actually, I think I may have a hologram from the Marvel series one as well.
Cool.
Yep, here we go. It's pretty bruised, but
jeez, look at that.
Yeah, I mean this one holds up really good. Considering how beat up and old it is, I mean that one held up pretty damn well.
That brings back old memories.
Right?
Wow. See, that was like 20 years ago. Almost.
Yeah. Oh, no. Probably over 20 years ago. That must have been 90 or 91.
Was it that
long ago? That would have been 1990.
Wow, 22 years ago.
This is the card that I always liked the best was the Stan Lee Mr. Marvel card. Take a look at that, guys. Yeah, you can see it's Stan Lee's face, and it has he's got part Silver Surfer, part Captain America, Daredevil, Spider-Man. There's a little bit of Doctor Strange, some Thor in there. The Thing, Invisible Woman. They kind of drew a lot into this facial piece right here.
And even back then, Stan Lee was old as dirt.
He's 90, dude.
He's 90. I looked him up. Yeah, Nick Carty, who we met, was 91.
Wow.
So good.
Yeah, but
for
Nick
that.
Carty's awesome.
He is awesome.
Well, boys, I think it's about that time to wrap the episode up. And now that we've had a lesson in 1990s Marvel comics, thanks to Rook. Thank you very much, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, actually, I enjoyed that quite a bit. That was great fun. I'm sorry that all the people listening to it didn't get to see these cards. So.
Maybe we'll post some images.
We can take some pictures. We'll post them.
Well, could you scan every one of these cards so I can put them up there?
I'm sure there's some There's websites out there that have all the images of the cards. We'll have to find them, and then we'll post it on the blog.
Yeah, we'll get some posted up.
Speaking of the blog, you most likely found us there. But if not, you can find us at twodimensionpodcast.blogspot.com. And all our episodes are set there. And Don always posts images and links that go along with each episode, so you can read further and see stuff that we're talking about. You can also find us on Facebook, and while you're at it, go ahead and friend us on there. Send us some comments. We'd love comments. And you can, this is the last time I'm going to plug it. You can find my webcomic, The Mighty Blue, at the Mighty Blue.
MightyBlueComic.blogspot. Really last time he'll plug it.
Well, this episode at least. MightyBlueComic.blogspot.com, or I'm also on Smack Jeeves. Just go to SmackJeeves.com and just keyword The Mighty Blue.
You're up to 10 pages, correct? 10 pages?
And as of once people are hearing this episode, it'll probably be like 13 pages or something like that.
He is cranking them out.
All right, thank you so much for listening, guys. We really hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed putting it together. We'll be back soon, and until then, take care of yourselves and read more comics.